Hallelujah. I want you to open up to two places this morning. Joshua chapter 5 is where we're going to start. Also John chapter 6. This is the last Sunday of 2012. Of course, this is the time of year, you know, and everybody starts thinking about New Year's resolutions. When I think about, myself, you probably can't guess this by looking at me, but I've battled being overweight my whole life, you know. It just didn't start recently. And I told you we moved from town to town about every 6 months as I was growing up. I was always the new fat kid in town. And I learned how to fight. I didn't win all those fights, but at least they found out I wasn't going to lay down, you know. Well, I'm thinking about this new year, you know, because the most common resolution I've made over the years, the one I've made most often is to lose weight. And I have. Then I gained it back. I was thinking if I had all of that weight off that I have lost over the years and then gained back, I wouldn't exist because it's more than me. You know, that's what you call non-permanent change. And that's not really what the Lord is after with us. See? The reason that I've vacillated like that is I've never really dealt with the root. That's dealing with the fruit. But if the root is still in you, then the fruit's going to keep coming back. You can prune it all you want to. But until you deal with the root... Now, there has been a lot of permanent change in my life, coming to know the Lord, and this really is, it's applicable, it applies to the message that we're going to see today. We're coming into a season of change, and not just because it's a new year. I kept hearing the Lord say that, there's been permanent change in every one of you, not only you here, but those that around the world that have become part of this message. You know, you've entered in, you're doing your seasons of prayer, and yes, even fasting, meditation of the word, and all those things. Well, you're going to come to certain areas of permanent change. I mean, y'all just don't know the Gary Carpenter that Sue was stuck with in the beginning. You know, I mean, I drank like a fish. You just wouldn't believe it. I did that for many years. But when the Lord came into my life back in 1980, I had my last drink. That was 33 years ago now, a couple of days. 33 years ago. I call that fairly permanent. Okay. Then y'all know I smoked for eternity in 3 days. But finally, the root of that got dealt with after a long time. And now that's been, you know, been at a decade or more now to figure it back up. Permanent change. Well, then you have battles still going on. Am I the only one that's still battling some things? See, mine is still pretty obvious, you know, with the weight thing. I mean, that's, you know, some people's problems are easily seen. Hello. Others, you know, they battle other things. You know, greed that's not so easily seen. Envy, jealousy, anger. A lot of times what I see in the church is a lack of worthiness. Okay? Or you feel unworthy all the time. You know? The Lord doesn't want you living that way. He doesn't. You know, even Paul didn't consider himself to have arrived. If Paul, by the time he wrote the letter to the Philippians, hadn't arrived, then it's okay that you haven't arrived. God doesn't require us to be perfect, really. God requires our best efforts, though, to possess the land. As these kind of thoughts were rolling through me this morning, and I'm just listening for the voice of the Lord, the most unusual verse way back in the Old Testament, here back in Joshua, started coming to me. And we'll read it first and then back up a little bit. But it's Joshua chapter 5, verse 12. What I kept hearing was this little phrase here. And the manna ceased. The manna ceased. There was a time of manna. Then there was a time when that manna ceased. Now we're going to look in a minute over John chapter 6 where Jesus talks about himself being our manna. How many of you? See, I don't believe our manna is going to cease. Okay? So I haven't taught a whole lot out of this passage right here in Joshua because I don't, there's things about it I don't fully understand. Reading the commentaries doesn't help much. Most of them, you know, and they're trying. I mean, bless their hearts. You know, they love God. They're trying to understand. But most of the commentaries, they boil down to this. Well, this earth where we're living now is the wilderness. While we're in this wilderness, we need the manna. And we'll have that manna all this time. But then once we go to heaven, then we'll be in his presence. We won't need the manna. Problem is, this transition here, what's going on, is they're leaving the wilderness and they're about to enter battle, real battle. The conquering of the land is about to begin. How many of you think we're going to have battles like that in heaven? How many of you think heaven is now possessed by the enemy? And we've got to go drive the enemy out. Now see, that typology will not fit. That's not what it's a type of. Okay? But it is definitely talking about a change. All right? So let's back up a little bit. Now this is right before the Battle of Jericho. They haven't even had their main first battle yet. But they have had a major victory. They have crossed over into the land, and at first it looked impossible. Because the river Jordan was at flood stage, you remember? And man, no, I mean, it was so wide, nobody dared go across. And so they'd pray and ask God. Now, here's one of those deals I tell you all the time. You know, your first problem is you can't hear God. Then you pray. Then you got a bigger problem because you heard God. So they prayed and they said, God, the river's at flood stage. You know, Lord, what are we going to do? What is the answer, God? This flood is deadly. What would you have us do? He says, cross over to the other side. He says, get the priests and those carrying the ark, get them to go first and get the trumpeters and just march right into that water. And they're going, what? You said what? See, and so often that's what faith is. Faith has to step into the impossible. But at the voice of God, at his direction is what matters. And we're going to see that so plainly here in this chapter. So that's already just happened. I mean, it looked deadly. It looked deadly. God's going, put your toe in the water. No, I'll die. Put your toe in the water. I said, put it in there. No, I'll die. And then finally that first one, he puts his toe, you know, he steps into the water. And what happens? I mean, that water backs up for miles. And they cross on dry land. Well, picking it up here then in Joshua 5, verse 1. And it came to pass when all the kings of the Amorites, which were on the side of Joshua westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, when they heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we were passed over, their heart melted. Neither was their spirit in them anymore. Because of the children of Israel. Don't think God doesn't put fear in your enemies. Those enemies that so, I'm talking about those demonic, I'm not talking about people. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. We wrestle against principalities and powers and rulers of darkness and so forth. That warfare, those enemies that are always trying to make you feel like like you're nothing. The real truth is they are terrified of you because of your God. You're the conqueror, not them. Got that? So verse 2, at that time, the Lord said unto Joshua, make these sharp knives and circumcise again the children of Israel the second time. And Joshua made him sharp knives, circumcised the children of Israel at the hill of the foreskins. And this is the cause why Joshua did circumcise. All the people that came out of Egypt that were males, even all the men of war, they died in the wilderness, by the way, after they came out of Egypt. Now all the people that came out were circumcised. But all the people that were born in the wilderness, by the way, as they came forth out of Egypt, them they had not circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness, till all of the people that were men of war, which came out of Egypt, were consumed. Now, if you underline in your Bible, you should underline these next few words. Why? Why did they fail? Because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord. If you fail, I'm telling you now, it'll be because you failed to obey the voice of the Lord. And it's scary. It was scary to the first bunch. It was scary to this bunch. When they come up to the River Jordan, it looked like certain death to obey God. Trust me when I say, I've been at this a while. When you start hearing God and you hear Him say something, it looks like financial death. It looks like the death of all your social life. It looks like the death of your esteem. I mean, it's difficult. It's not easy on the flesh to obey the voice of the Lord. And the first bunch, it came up there. He sent them to spy out the land. They would not obey Him. Only 2 out of the 12 had a good report. They said, let's go. Let's do it. But the vast majority said, no, don't ever go with the majority either. You and God are a majority. Look at it again. This is why people fail. Because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord. Now, while we're at it, let me tell you something else. Gary, have you always obeyed the voice of the Lord? You've got to be kidding. Y'all have heard my story, how I was doing okay, and I got ruined by this Dave Roberson guy, who's sitting right over there. Tells me to go pray and that I'll hear God. So I go pray, and I heard God. Scared the bejabbers out of me. You know, driving my trucks, making a living, praying. You know, most of the time it was revelation knowledge, you know, I mean, and Him loving on me and everything. But finally, you know, He doesn't come as teacher, He comes as Lord. And I heard Him just as plain as you're hearing my voice. If you'd have been in the cab of the truck, I don't know whether you'd have heard it, but to me it was that way. It didn't seem like a voice from the inside of me. It seemed like a voice from the outside of me. This is your last trip as a truck driver. When you get back off of this trip, give your dispatcher 2 weeks' notice. He will not require it of you, and you'll be free to serve me full time. Now, what part of that is hard to understand? You know? Trouble of it is, He had never even told me. I didn't know what my calling was. Serve you full time doing what? And by the way, how are we going to eat? What about my bills? What about my car payment? What about I had a car payment, like, you know, I had rent to pay. Kids, you know? Well, the kids were pretty much out of the house at that point, but still. And I, you know, did you obey Him? No, I didn't obey Him. Didn't do that at all. I didn't even tell Sue I heard Him. Because I know if I told Sue, she'd say, you better obey the voice of the Lord. For the next 10 months, the Lord just continued to love. And I continued to pray. I just didn't obey Him. And you know what? He still loved me during that next 10 months. Revelation knowledge came. I mean, I could show you the things that I wrote, you know. And I would feel His presence from time to time. And He loved on me for the next 10 months. But again, this is the best analogy that I can give on it. See, if the good shepherd, when you hear him and he says, go this way, and you're like a sheep and he's like the shepherd, he carries a rod and a staff. You ever notice that, a rod and a staff? Well, that staff, that little crook there on the end of it, if you start inadvertently getting out of the way, that crook is to gently put around your neck and get you back on path. But that rod, you know what it's for? It's to drive the wolf away. But see, if the shepherd goes, now follow me this way, which I heard him go full time, I heard him follow me this way, and the sheep says, bet me, I'm going that way. Well, eventually, if you persist in your disobedience, you know, the way I put it, you get out beyond rod length. You know, I eventually got out there on the devil's turf, got out there as far away from the path of God, that I got attacked by the wolf and he nearly took me off the planet. Y'all remember, I'm not going to retell that whole story, but I had a heart problem that nearly took me on to heaven. You know, and I had an epiphany. Y'all know the word epiphany? So you come to yourself and you have a revelation. I came to this startling revelation in the hospital, barely missing heaven, you know. I told Sue, I said, I think it'd be in my best interest to obey God. That was a great epiphany in my life, you know. You know, I figured out that really the only place to see what's scary, they were afraid to obey the voice of the Lord. But here's what you'll find. Here's the amazing, astounding truth. The only place of real safety is to obey the voice of the Lord. That's the only place of real safety. To obey Him fully. But He's the God of the second chance, the third chance, the fourth chance. I mean, this is the other revelation I came to at that moment. Now, Tim is right when he says, delayed obedience is still disobedience. That is correct. I'm not arguing that. But I will add, but delayed obedience is better than no obedience at all. So I eventually did obey him, and y'all know the story. It's been working ever since. Didn't look like, but there's been lots and lots of scary battles since then. Every time you're going to have a choice whether to obey the voice of the Lord or not obey the voice of the Lord. Now back to verse 6 of Joshua. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness till all the people that were men of war, which came out of Egypt, were consumed, because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord, unto whom the Lord sware that he would not show them the land, which the Lord sware unto their fathers, that he would give us a land that floweth with milk and honey. And their children, whom he raised up in their stead, them Joshua circumcised, for they were uncircumcised, because they had not circumcised them by the way. And it came to pass, when they had done circumcising all the people, that they abode in their places in the camp till they were whole. And the Lord said unto Joshua, this day have I rolled away the reproach of Egypt from off you. Wherefore the name of the place is called Gilgal until this day. And the children of Israel encamped in Gilgal and kept the Passover. Now you got to understand, this is important. They had not kept the Passover during the 40 years in the wilderness. Okay, this is the first time now. During that time of judgment, they did not keep the Passover. But now in the promised land, in the land, the type of the new birth, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at evening in the plains of Jericho. Now notice, and they did eat of the old corn of the land on the morrow after the Passover, unleavened cakes and parched corn in the self same day. And the manna ceased on the morrow after they had eaten of the old corn of the land. Neither had the children of Israel manna any more. It never came back. But they did eat of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. Now next it goes into the battle of Jericho. Now, for again, most commentaries will tell you, because we know our manna doesn't cease. In fact, let's go ahead and look at what Jesus said about the manna over in John chapter 6, talking about himself being the manna. We'll pick it up here in John 6:28. Then said they unto him, what shall we do that we might work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, this is the work of God. I never can pass this up without, I mean, what a great day of revelation this was. I think I got this one in the trucks. See, look how they asked the question. What shall we do that we might work the works of God? Notice it's plural. The works of God. Notice how he answers. This is the work. Singular. All of the works proceed from doing the work. What is the work? That you believe on him whom he, God, has sent. All of the works proceed from the work. Believing on him, really believing on him. Not like the word believe has in our modern English language, American language anyway. Just like have knowledge of, no. John 3:16, for God so loved the world, they gave his only begotten son, that they who believed on him, Look it up in the Amplified. That word believed doesn't mean have knowledge of alone. Believe in, trust in, rely upon, depend upon. That's what it means here too. Those that learn to trust in, rely upon, depend upon, trust Him. For He becomes your life. That's really what the manna, that's what He's about to talk about here. That is the work. And the more that we believe on Him in that way, that work, that singular work, is the work from which all other works proceed. It's Christ in us, our hope of glory. See? Well, let's go on here. See what Jesus says about the manna. They said therefore unto Him, what sign showest thou then, that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert. As it is written, He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that manna from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is He which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. If you get a chance, Sunday night, right before Christmas, I did a service at Calling in the Lost called The True Meaning of Christmas. Really illustrates that verse. It's only about, the teaching portion is only about 45 minutes. If you have a chance, you ought to listen to that. The True Meaning of Christmas. It's at daveroberson.org. So, and at our website. Verse 34, then said they unto Him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. And Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger. He that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you that you also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that every one which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. The Jews then murmured at him because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. And they said, is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? Well, really, they did not know his father. Anyway, how is it then that he saith, I came down from heaven? Jesus therefore answered and said unto them, murmur not among yourselves. No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him, and I will raise him up in the last day. It is written in the prophets, and they shall all be taught of God. Every man therefore that hath heard and hath learned of the Father cometh unto me. Not that any man hath seen the Father, save he which is of God, he hath seen the Father. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me hath everlasting life. Now here it is again. I am that bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the what? Life of the world. Again, I recommend that Christmas message to you. Now, let's keep going. Let's get every bit of this. Verse 53. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Boy, there's so much of the born-again trail that flashes right there when I read that, you know. The whole species of Adam is dead. It's already been judged. It's already at the cross. God saw the whole species of Adam dead. There is no life in Adam at all. Never will be. the species of Adam cannot be saved. The species of Adam is dead. The only life that is available, as far as God is concerned, are those from that dead species who believe on Christ. And the Spirit of the living God quickens that dead spirit on the inside of them to new life. He says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood. In other words, unless he becomes you, there's this mingling closer than any intimacy on earth, this rebirth. Unless that happens, you have no life in you. The species, that's why all religion is vain. That's why Carlton and all the rest of them are so wrong. There is no way to the Father but by Jesus Christ. Those that preach the Jew have a separate covenant. They have no life in them. They are of the species of Adam. There is no life without Jesus. I heard someone say to a preacher one time, say, well, do you think there might be aliens on other planets? You think there might be life on other planets? He thought a minute and he says, I don't know, but if there is, they're going to need Jesus. There is no life without him. He is life. That's what he's saying. I am that bread. I am that manna. And I know my manna is not going to cease. I don't think my manna is going to cease in heaven. So what is the typology for a love offering of 1995? No. Hey, they're charging a lot more than that on TV. Anyway, we're going to do our best. Verse 53 again. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood, which, by the way, both of those things are forbidden in the law. No wonder they were like, what? Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As the living Father hath sent me, and I live by the Father. Boy, now that's important. How did this Son of God, Son of Man, 80 some odd times, Mark told us, Mark did the research, he called himself Son of Man. How did he come to exist? How did, as a man, how did he, now don't get me wrong, he's divine, but he's Son of God, Son of Man. How is he standing there? How does he exist? He tells you right here. I live by the Father. The life that's in him is from the Father. It is life. He, again, I recommend that Christmas message to you. God was reseeding the earth with life once more. And I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me. Jesus is your Adam. He is called the second man, the last Adam. There's not coming another one either. It's Christ or perish. That's all there is. Verse 58, this is that bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead. He that eateth of this bread shall live forever. All right. You can put a marker in Galatians chapter 2. We'll be there eventually. So I've been meditating for years this passage back there in Joshua where it talks about the manna that it ceased. See, and that's not the only thing that stopped. You know, for a long period of time, they were how was Israel led? How did they know what to do next? How did they know where to go, what to do? Well, it was the cloud by day and the fire by night. But there was a time when that ceased. If you read the book of Joshua, Joshua didn't follow some cloud. Joshua hears from the Lord. See, it's a type of the new covenant, type over into the promised land. You don't have to be led by a cloud, goosebumps. I hate that feeling, I feel led. I mean, I hate that saying, I felt led. Your life is more important to God than a feeling. You know, you're an intelligent being with the life of God on the inside of you. He is an intelligent being. He is able to speak and you are able to hear. Jesus said, "My sheep hear my voice." You're led by him, see. So I'm going back to that type and shadow. Now let's meditate. Let's really meditate for a minute. Go back with me to those thrilling days of yesteryear. Here, you're born during the time of the 40-year wilderness. Now your parents are the ones that disobeyed God. They're not ever going to see the promised land, but you're going to see the promised land. But all you know is you were born. You were born in a wilderness. You're born in a time of desert. You don't know much about seed time and harvest. You don't know anything really about seed time and harvest because you can't plant. I mean, what if you plant one day and the cloud moves the next day? How are you going to ever tend that crop and harvest a crop? That's not going to happen. So God comes up with a way to sustain them while they're in the wilderness. They can't eat of the crops. So God provides this manna, which, by the way, they hated. It says they loathed this white bread. Now, it also says that it was like flaky honey wafers. Mark Jenkins knows a lot about that. Every now and then we eat at the restaurant. The food really is not important, you know, because he's just waiting till they bring the sopapillas, which is a flaky pastry kind of honey, and they put honey on it and whipped cream. Anyway. I don't know if the manna was like that at all. But I digress. I couldn't resist it. But you grow up in the wilderness. Now, I don't care if you're in the wilderness or what. You got to eat. Well, what did you learn your whole life? Well, God is our provider. Well, how does he provide? Every morning, you get your little bucket and you look out your tent door. And you're going to see at a certain time of day, now it's early in the morning, you can't be a slacker and sleep till noon and get your manna. But if you get up early and you go and gather, then there's manna for you every day. And you go diligently and you take your bucket or whatever, your omer, I don't know, whatever it is you have. That's not Homer, it's an omer. But anyway. And you gather, said some gathered much, some gathered little, but they came in, they redistributed it so that everybody had enough for them and their house. Well, that's how provision comes. And let's say you were born right at the early part of that 40 years. So you're 40 years old. And for 40 years, is that long enough time to establish patterns in your life and habits, habitual? How does God provide? You get your bucket, you go get the manna. You know, only thing required is you can't sleep till noon. You got to get up and get out of the tent. By the way, that's a lesson for this generation. But sorry, not everybody. Go to work. Oh, anyway. Not everybody, that's right. All right, I've lost my train of thought. Okay. What I'm trying to get at, we're in a time of change. Well, they come in, they finally, this group, the thing that's different about them than the fathers that perished, this group will obey God. Both groups could hear God. Now, they couldn't hear him individually, but God through the leaders. Now, you can hear God individually for yourself. Okay, you are the temple of God. Type and shadow, though. That first bunch, why couldn't they possess the land? They wouldn't obey God's voice, even when they accurately heard God's voice. This group, even though it's scary, I mean, it looked like certain death to put your toe in the water of that Jordan River. The difference between this group and the other group, this group will obey his voice. All right, so you've crossed over, you've obeyed him. Man, you saw a great miracle. You've come over into the promised land. You camp here at Gilgal. They circumcise you. You have the Passover for the first time in 40. You've never seen it before. Maybe you've heard about it, but now you actually experience the Passover and all that goes on with that. And you eat the corn of the new land. You've had your first taste of life. You've had your first taste of something different than the wilderness. And tomorrow morning, it's time for your provision. You get your bucket. You open the tent door. You go out to get it. And there's nothing. And you go, has God forsaken me? No, you're in a season of change. Your provision is not going to come that way. Well, I'll just wait. I'll just wait. Maybe God took Monday off. It's a new year. It's a holiday. I'll try tomorrow. I'll take my bucket out tomorrow. You know, hunger is a great motivator. After a few days, you go, what's up, you know? See, that method was never coming back again. We're talking about permanent change. You know how provision comes now? By warfare. Got quiet real quick when I said that. Well, how does my provision come now? You see that big stronghold over there? That's called Jericho. Straightly shut up, you know. They're ready for war. Now, you don't know that their hearts have fainted because of fear. You don't know. Looks like this big, giant, impenetrable stronghold to you. God says, you want to eat, do you? Conquer that stronghold. How would I do that? Now, in this case, they didn't really have to take the sword. They had to follow other instructions that seemed totally ridiculous. Start marching around the city. March around it 7 times. Blow with a trumpet. Make a great sound. The walls will fall down flat. Oh, yeah, there's lots of history of that kind of thing happening. Never happened before in all of history. Yet that was God's instruction. The difference between this group and the other group, they were willing to obey God. As ridiculous as it sounded, as crazy to the natural mind as it sounded, as scary as it was, when they finished obeying God, what happened to the walls, people? Did you know that wasn't the end of it? Then they had to draw their sword. Then they went into battle. Never had they done anything. This was totally out of character. They had not had to do that before. Before, what do? You just take your bucket. It's very sweet and nice. You just go out and you get your manna. Now, I'm sick of manna after 40 years. But you notice how everything about it changed. And if you're going, waiting for it to go back the way it was, it's never going to go back. The manna never came again. How does that apply to us? What in the world is the typology? Again, it can't be what the commentators say, that Jesus is our manna while we're in this wilderness on earth, and that once we go to heaven, that the manna will cease or something. Well, that's the typology won't fit. That's where the battles really begin. Heaven is not currently occupied by demons. There are no strongholds there to cast down. What is he really talking about? He's talking about the strongholds we have. You know what Paul was, he was writing, he says, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they are mighty through God to the pulling down of what? Strongholds and every high thing. It's a perfect picture. He's talking about going to war on the inside of us. Now, yes, sir. Let me say that. I want to say that phrase exactly the way I heard it this morning. What he was showing me was this. He said there's really two stages in Christian life. There is a long growing up period where Jesus, I mean, he is your manna. He is everything. He's your provider. I remember the honeymoon stage. I remember when I first got born again. The grass was greener. The sky was bluer. I mean, I remember, I don't think my feet quite touched the floor when I walked, you know. It was like, I remember driving across the Arkansas River and I was thinking, that's the most beautiful river on earth. You got to be seeing from a heavenly perspective, you know, if you think the Arkansas is pretty, you know. See, and the honeymoon stage doesn't really last that long. By the way, y'all do know marriage is not a continual honeymoon. You know, a real marriage is work, and it's also love, and it's also life. See, there is a time when Jesus. Again, I'm having trouble. See, I didn't ever say it out loud, and so I'm still having trouble vocalizing what I heard. I'm going to do. Here's a try number one. See, there's a period of time where there is no warfare, really. You're just in love with Him. He is everything to you. He is your provider. And He's always that way. God was their provider. Yes, sir, that's good. God was their provider when the manna was coming and after the manna ceased. See? It's the method of provision that changes. Yes, sir. Now, I'm going to try it again. Here's my first try. See? There is a time when Jesus is your manna. But then there becomes a time when Jesus is you. Did you find Galatians chapter 2? See, there's that period of time where, oh man, even there in that time when I'm first born again and I had that fresh forgiveness and I was like, I love you, Jesus. And He was out there kind of, but He was everywhere and He loved me. And got to remember that first week. I mean, I was smoking like a freight train. I'm still sipping my bourbon and Coke. I don't remember exactly when that quit. It was sometime in the drinking quit sometime in the first couple of weeks. I don't know exactly. But I mean, I was a mess. Absolute wreck. I mean, most religion would have judged me as not being saved. And I'm telling you, be careful of that. Because me and the Lord had a thing going on, boy. But it was, Jesus was my manna externally coming to me all the time. And that's the, but boy, it was wonderful. But see, as time has gone on, those strongholds He's talking about, those strongholds is not really your bank account. It's not really your, it's not your neighbor. It's not your spouse. Those strongholds He's talking about is the things in you. The things in Gary that are not Christ-like. Those are the things that have to start coming down. And there comes a time then when you have to start facing yourself. Galatians chapter 2. Verse 20, of course. He says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Now what did Jesus say? Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. But if you do, then you have His life in you. John, in his first John, he said, he that hath the Son hath life. He that hath not the Son hath not life. Well, I had that life the first week. I mean, I really did. I had it, but my experiential relationship, that first few weeks with the Lord, it was like His love was just raining down on me. And I was still me, and He was Him. Boy, this is... I wonder how this sounds to the unbeliever. You know? See, y'all laugh because you've experienced it. You know what I'm talking about. But, I mean, it was... And I needed it every day. I mean, it was wonderful. But there was a day when He starts saying, hey, what about these strongholds? Are you ever going to start possessing the land? When are you going to put your toe in the water? I'm not going to do that. That looks like certain death. Yes. It's called mortification. What? Start praying in tongues. You get this river of tongues going. That's a good analogy. Get this river of tongues going. He says, put your toe in the water. It's time to start dealing with some strongholds. See, that's Galatians 2:20. I am crucified with Christ. I didn't know I was crucified with Christ that first week. Are you kidding? I just knew I was going to hell the week before. Now I'm not. And I felt this tremendous weight off of me. Still, I remember it so well. I felt so light, even though I was heavy. Nevertheless, I live, but yet not I. Now see, not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave Himself for me. See, when we, there comes a time of change. In my life, there's been several of them, to be honest with you. But that typology from Joshua is so accurate. Everything about it changes. You say, well, I don't want to go to war. I don't like battle. Let's say it a different way. Man, he would have to use that. See, Gary doesn't like fasting. I don't like it. I think they misspelled it. They left out an E. It's supposed to be feasting. By prayer and feasting. It's just a grammar thing. I wish. I don't like it. You know, my soul doesn't really like sitting and praying in tongues for, you know, hours at a time. It wants to do anything but that. You know? But see, warfare, those are the things that you do to start putting mortification to the flesh. And yeah, the flesh doesn't like it. It doesn't like fasting. It doesn't like sitting there while prayer is going on. It doesn't understand what's being said. My flesh, I'll be honest, I'm as human as anybody else. No, I'm not. Anyway, well, my flesh is. Do y'all know there's... Now don't. If y'all tell Dave, I'll deny this, even though he's sitting right there. Do you know there's times on Wednesday night when I don't want to come to church? Seriously? My flesh would rather stay home and watch anything. But see, I've learned, I do know about my flesh. You give it an inch, it'll take a mile. Miss one Wednesday, pretty soon it's every other Wednesday. Then you don't come on Wednesdays anymore. Then it's the early service. Then it's the Sunday night service. Pretty soon you're lucky to make it to church twice a month. Then pretty soon we may not see you at all. That's the flesh. Well, Christ is the exact opposite of that. Christ does not pet the flesh. He's not the Adam of your flesh. God is not the father of your flesh. He is the father of your spirit. That warfare, every time that you decide to spend some time praying in other tongues, to spend some time fasting. See, most of the church, I'll be honest with you, you know most of the church thinks all those things passed away. Most of the church doesn't spend any time praying. The church at large doesn't spend any time praying in tongues. Don't even think it's of God, which is amazing to me. The denomination I grew up in, they look at you funny. You talk about fasting. Their idea of fasting might be, I'm not going to have the piece of pie after lunch. That's suffering for Jesus, you know. I'm serious. They think, you talk to them about doing even a 7-day fast, I mean, much less a 40-day. You better talk, you know, I mean, they think you're going crazy. But see, the new creatures that you are, man, God has put us in a place of dominion. We are born of God. We don't have to just hear God. Now, I thank God that I have heard his voice through Pastor Dave more than once. And others. My daughter Angie's over there. Come prophesying to me the real voice of God. Come prophesying to me years before we were in ministry. Just trembling and shaking. Come prophesy to her daddy. And I took it to heart, you know. It was the real voice of God. But see, at this stage now, after all these years, I feel embarrassed if God has to use a prophet, even Pastor Dave, to tell me something. But I haven't grown up enough where I can hear you for myself. Usually that's not the problem. Yes, okay, somebody knows what I'm about to say. You're usually hearing it, you're just not acknowledging it. I didn't hear that. He goes, yes, you did. No, I didn't. I'm still getting in the line for direction. I already spoke to you. That's not what I... No, I didn't hear you. Sorry. I didn't mean to go to meddling. But you come into the real season of warfare. Well, once you come here and you begin eating the food that's on the table at the prayer center, if you take it to heart, honey, you're going to war. You're going to war. The more those strongholds you cast down, the more of those unchristlike things on the inside that get pulled down, the more your provision comes in every way. I'm not speaking primarily of material things, although that's involved. I'm talking about your peace, your joy, your calling, your effectiveness, everything about you. It's not coming the old way. Trying to be nice too today, you know. Last Sunday of the year, you ought to be nice. I thank God for everybody who's saved. I thank God for those that sit in the church pews and get babysitted to heaven. Thank God for the pastors that'll do that. And I know that Jesus, I know they love Jesus. And I know they, in some ways, I think about those that perished in the wilderness, but they still perished in God. They perished. They just didn't enjoy the promised land. Didn't mean they weren't God's people. Am I saying it right? All right. A lot of churches like that. Jesus is like your manna your whole life in the sense of, oh my. And that's even really coming to the forefront now with the radical grace message. He'll accept your flesh just the way you are. You don't have to go to war. You don't have to do anything. You know, just he's your manna. Just enjoy. Everything's okay. Yeah, you'll perish in the wilderness too. I'm not saying you're not go to heaven. I'm just saying, where's the abundant life? Where is the promised land? Where is your calling? Where is victory? Is that all there is? Just eat manna. No warfare. No victories. I don't see that in the life of Jesus. I don't see that in the life of the 12. Nothing could stop them. They were an immovable, unstoppable force for the kingdom of God. And that's what we are. See, I don't really plan these messages. What I do now is I spend my time meditating the word in prayer. And then when it's time to deliver, I listen. Now, the fact that he would bring up this passage on this last Sunday of the year, I think we're coming into a season of change. Even for those of us that have been warriors for a long time, and we've seen, yes, sir. Now, you know and I know, you old timers. You can go to war and you can have victories, and you can stop warfare at any point along the way. Israel did that. You'll read in there, Joshua later tells them somewhere near the end of the book. I have a great message on this, but great series on this. He says, any of those Canaanites and Amorites that you do not drive out of the land, he said, they will become thorns in your sides and pricks in your eyes. In other words, they will torment you all the days of your life. Even us old timers that maybe, I can tell, I have victories over things, you know. I have victories, permanent ones, had them for decades. But I also could tell you, I've had seasons of resting on my laurels. What does that mean? Okay, we got to erase these last 3 minutes. Well, you quit praying. And you quit fasting, and you just quit going to war. And you coast. And the devil hopes you coast till the end. Now, he'd like you not to just coast. See, there's really very little coasting. You're either going up or you're normally backsliding, one or the other. So even for us old timers, it's been at this a while, and that's just not the people in this room. you know. It's time to say, where did I put that shield? Honey, have you seen my sword? Where did I haven't used that thing in a while. You know? Where's that armor? You go find it in the closet, it's all rusty. Get out, get it out, polish it up again, get the rust off of it. Take that sword and get a fine edge on it again. What is the sword? It's the Word of God. I'm amazed when I talk with people and they're going through hell. I mean, literally going through hell. And I start asking them, what verses are you standing on? And they look at me and bat their eyes. What confessions are you making? What are you saying out loud with the word, with your mouth? Taking the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Have you quit doing that? Are you in any battles right now? What are you conquering right now? What battles are you currently engaged in to possess more of the life of Christ? Because it's been His life is the land that's been spread out before us. It's ours to have all you want of it. But all of Him you get, you got to drive the enemy out. And we're talking about your soul. I'm not talking about your spirit. Your spirit is fine. You are created righteous and holy. It's that land of the soul where the emotions, and that's where the strongholds are. The hurts, and things down through the years. Going back to the guy who grew up in the wilderness. Now it's time to go to war. Man, what a shock to your system. Even after the walls fall down flat, you've still got to take your sword and you got to go put the enemy to death. Type and shadow. That's praying in tongues. That's mortification of the flesh. That's fasting. That's doing all of the worship, spending time. That's doing all of the things we do here. But the more you carry, every stronghold you pull down is land now cleared for the life of Christ to be made more manifest in you. At first, He is like manna from without you. But as time goes on, His life becomes you. The life that I live by the faith of the Son of God. It's no longer I who live, but Christ. Christ who lives in me. Amen? All right, time to go to war, people. See you in 30 minutes.